Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Really, WS7.
Welcome to the Really 007 podcast for yet another look into the extensive James Bond songbook catalogue. I think this is now our eighth look, I think, into the many varied songs from the last 60 years. I mean, what a legacy that is. And yeah, you can download all our episodes. They're on iTunes and Spotify in audio format. And we've got video interviews and more on our YouTube channel. If you just look up Really 007, you should be able to find us. And please subscribe, rate, and recommend us too. Went a bit high-pitched then at the end. Anyway, we're on social media, as some of you will have gathered, many of you will have gathered. So Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Again, yeah, please give us a follow and join in on the chat, of which there is plenty. So special shout-out tonight to Mr. Phil Joyce, who is a devoted listener and a positive voice on Twitter. Who'd have thought? But anyway, thanks for your support, Phil. But tonight, I'm actually joined by, first of all, a regular contributor and my brother, Math. Good evening, Math.
Good evening, Tom.
And we've also got not one, but two special guests and friends of the show. And actually, I was thinking they both share something in common. They've both got stage names. So I'm joined by the bold man and the man with the red trousers. That's correct, isn't it? Their real names, anyway, are Chris Eales. He's the man with the red trousers, and I believe he's got red trousers on tonight. And also David Stevens, who is the bold man. So good evening, Jeff.
Good evening.
Good evening, MQ Minister.
Now that we're all here.
Very good. I'll turn to young Chris, first of all. Now, I think I first came across you on Twitter where, I mean, I'm basically the guy who does all the Twitter stuff, but I think you sent a picture. Was it your son was playing with a Duplo or some kind of oil rig, and you were like, this is reminding me of the Diamonds Are Forever review that we did with David, not this David, the A License to Quido.
That's exactly right. That was a while ago, and I think that was one of my first posts on my 007 bookshelf Instagram account. Please follow, like, and subscribe. Yeah, what was it? 6 hours worth?
No,
forever
episodes. I think it was 10 hours.
Oh, right. Even more. So saturated with Diamonds Are Forever. I was just sat there early one morning, and my boy had been playing Duplo, and I said, "It was like this is the oil rig from Diamonds Are Forever, and that's Tiffany. There's Bond. There's the Bartho sub, and
yes."
The universe aligned.
No, it was very encouraging to see that because, you know, when you start a podcast, you've no idea who's listening other than a couple of mates. And even they probably aren't actually listening. Yeah. But there's a whole community of Bond fans that certainly we didn't know were out there. And it's brilliant to see them, not just in England, of course, and in Great Britain, but all over the world. It's been amazing to interact with them. But yes, Chris, you mentioned you've got this 007 bookshelf account. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, it just sort of came out of this sort of book collection that I've got and thinking, okay, what's a way in to the Bond social media world? You know, I can't start a podcast. You guys have cornered the market on that.
Well,
there are other Twitter accounts going on and reviews and that sort of thing, but there weren't that many that were focused on the books or focused on artwork and that sort of thing, which is where my collection sort of started. The first book I had was an old pan copy of Moonraker that was my grandfather's.
Oh, amazing.
And obviously there are all the other books, so started to collect just the books and then realizing, oh, they don't match up. So I've got to get that set, and then I've got to get that set and that set. And suddenly it just turns into, oh, I may have a little bit of a addiction problem.
You can see the bookshelf behind Chris.
And it just keeps going and going. And then...
incredible.
I think it was, cripes, 15 years ago, there was an exhibition in Edinburgh on the artwork of the Fleming books. So getting the catalogue for that, and using that as a reference manual and starting to tick off which ones have I got and all the rest of it and seeing which other ones there were out there. And there's some amazing artwork ranging from the beautiful to the coarse.
the racy
one. I mean, there is a selection of books from the 70s. I think it's the Granada print run where it's scantily clad women almost making love to these giant golden pistols. Not sure how that'd go down today. You know, no. You couldn't get that past the print.
PG, the films. They were for a bit, weren't they? So, I mean, it's not a bookshelf, really. It's a library I can see behind you. But is it growing? Is there room for more?
I think I've got to hold off. I've got to hold off for the moment. And this probably isn't exactly all of it. You know, my parents' loft also contains a couple of boxes of extra material, which at some point I will have to take ownership of.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Both of you guys were on our anniversary special, which it was lovely to see you there. And I think, Chris, we were focusing on, mainly the books we ended up talking about. I can't even remember what section was it meant to be on.
We were supposed to be talking about John Glenn.
It was about John Glenn? Okay, right, well, yeah.
We ended up segueing into You Only Live Twice,
I think. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Steve Clump was asking questions, wasn't he?
Yeah. All conversations on Twitter seem to end up with, well, it was like the novel You Only Live Twice at the moment, isn't it? It seems to be an excuse bandied around for everyone.
That's the touch point for the moment, yeah.
But what would you say your favourite Fleming novel was, Chris?
Favourite?
Did you remember?
You know what? I got a copy of that recently. The Folio Society did a reprint, and I picked it up thinking, oh, yeah, I could read this to my son. And the start of it is not... It's not that good a script. I need to wait a couple more years before he can get into that. No, favorite Fleming novel, certainly it's a toss-up between From Russia with Love and Manchester Secret Service. Mm. I think they are sort of the two cornerstones of his writing. And then obviously everything else sort of cascades from there. They do vary wildly in quality, some of them. And no, I've noticed recently, thinking about them all again, he's always playing with form. He's always playing with structure of the novels. From Russia with Love, the first half of the book, Bond isn't in it at all. It's all about the plan. And then on A Manchester Secret Service, him and Tracy are on the beach, and then it's a flashback for the past 48 hours before we get into the novel regularly. Spy Who Loved Me, again, Bond isn't even in it for the first two-thirds. Casino Royale, you start and then it's another flashback and then you go forward again. So there's always this playing with structure.
Chris, can I ask you a question? So clearly you're very, you know, knowledgeable about the books and a big fan of the books, I'm assuming. So how...
Yeah, I'm worried where this is going.
No, how...
I'm not sure a literary connoisseur.
It's more from the fact of being a fan of the books. So how either, I don't know, precious is a bit of a loaded question, but how much are you bothered or passionate that the film adaptations should be, you know, good adaptations of the book? Or are you, you know, fairly relaxed that, well, it's difficult to put that on screen or whatever. So, you know, whatever. So like for it, you know, I don't know. Moonraker, the film, is absolutely nothing like the book, but I don't know, but does that stop your enjoyment of the film? Are you able to completely detach from that? And like going forward, how much should, do you feel the films be a reflection of the books? If they're going to be new stories, how much do you, you know, think they should look back and hark back to the old books, if that makes sense?
I'm not precious that the films are not a reflection of the books, or at least those ones that are not reflective of the books. So On a Magic Secret Service is surprisingly close to the book and is my favourite of the Bond films, and it is wonderful. From Rush with Love is very close again, but obviously you can't get a direct remake of that because the structure of the book wouldn't allow it. Moonraker is set entirely in England and is very much a 50s Cold War story, so you can't transpose that to Roger Moore with space shuttles and all of the excessive fabulousness that entails. It's impossible. There's that line in Moonraker. The minister says, "I play cards with Drax," and that is in the big card scene in the book. So they touch on it, and it's okay. They're making some sort of connective tissue, but you can't be sacred to some of these things because they are such a period piece. The novels. When Pierce Brosnan was bandying about the idea of, oh yeah, let's make Casino Royale, set it in the 50s, let's get Quentin Tarantino to direct and Uma Thurman can be Vesper. Like, this could be good if it's set in the 50s and you want to be that reverential to the original text. But it didn't happen, doesn't matter. We got Daniel Craig's Casino Royale and it was fabulous. And that followed the novel quite closely. It swings and roundabouts.
Thank you.
Yeah. We might touch on that later when we're discussing more of a Craig film. Well, a video game based on a Craig film. See how we're getting on in terms of the Fleming and all that. Yeah. Anyway, that's absolutely brilliant. In terms of you growing up, though, Chris, with Bond, how did you get introduced to it?
I mentioned it on the anniversary special. It was sort of late. I remember the first seeing of Bond was late one Christmas night, catching the end of Goldfinger. Goldfinger was getting sucked out of the plane, and then it was crashing down, and then Sean Connery and Honor Blackman rolling around in their parachute, and then the music. What is this? This is fantastic. My God. And then my dad saying, oh, yeah, there's loads of other movies as well. I was like, all right, let's try and get some more. And then just recording them off the TV. So Thunderball every Easter bank holiday Monday seemed to be a staple during the late 80s, early 90s. I can remember having Moonraker on VHS recorded off the TV and watching that a lot. And then getting The Living Daylights, again, recorded off the TV. And it's all just, you know, we're of that age. I say we, I'm assuming we're all early, mid-late 40s. So it's, you know, we lived in that VHS time where you either saved up the money to buy them from HMV or you recorded them off the telly and tried to not get the ad breaks.
Or enjoy the ad breaks.
Or enjoy the ad breaks.
You do. The fact that brings it back to your day job, Chris. You're involved with advertising, aren't you?
Yeah, so I work as a producer making TV commercials, the one filling in the gaps in between the TV.
I'm sure it's a lot more than that, but that's brilliant. I know you have told us before on the anniversary special, you know, your favourite Bond actor and your favourite Bond film, but for those who didn't sit through the 5 hours of, you know, drudgery on that episode.
I was thinking about this, and I know I said sort of Sean Connery was the in with Goldfinger, but I sort of ebb and flow with mood. I looked at the Sorter app that did. You know what? It was quite an interesting way of picking what are your top Bonds, and I did it. What was it? A year ago? 2 years ago? And got On a Magic Secret Service, Octopussy, and The Living Daylights in the top three. And then I did it again recently, and it was the same top three, just jumbled up. Yeah. Okay, I can live with that. So those three are apparently my favorites. And then even the top 10 was roughly the same, just a bit mixed up. The bottom did remain the same, and I'm sure we can all...
I don't know. This was a year ago, so it might have changed.
It was, well, no, it was Die Another Day and Spectre and Quantum were swimming down in the bottom. That was joined by the latest... So yeah, so it changes. I mean, certainly it's that, and Best Bond always changes as well, because even though my best film is Honor Majesty's, I don't think George Lazenby was the best Bond. But then how do you quantify one and the other? So, you know, Roger was terrific, and at the moment I'm on a real, he was fantastic. But Dalton, if you offer me up one of his films, I'll snap it and be like, yes, that's perfect night viewing. So I can't pin myself down. It ebbs and flows.
So good though, isn't it? There's so much to enjoy.
Yeah.
So such a varied back catalogue. And yeah, we'll just watch them all over and over again, don't we? So David, yes. You've been waiting in the wings there. It was good to have you on our anniversary special as well, but How did you get into Bond and the world of James Bond?
Well, I've told this story before, actually, on James Bond Radio, so I'll try and keep it as brief as possible.
Other podcasts are available.
I've watched Bond films on the TV like any other person growing up in the UK. You know, they're on all the time, aren't they? But I remember the moment I became a Bond fan, and that was when I had to go and do work experience, which I'm sure everyone of our age will remember doing. And my school was quite keen that you do work experience, and if you don't find a placement, then you end up working in Woolworths for 2 weeks, probably restocking pick and mix or whatever, you know. So you're always quite keen to try and find a placement. My first week, I think, was in Barclays Bank, but I couldn't find a second week. So my uncle stepped in, who had a computing firm up in Brighton. He said, come and work with me for a week. And so I did. And he paid me as well, which is great. So I was away from home for the first time, disposable income. But my aunt and uncle were socialites. They used to go out a lot. So I was kind of home alone. This is pre-internet. You know, there's no there's not much to do, really. But they had a modest VHS collection. And within that modest VHS collection were four James Bond films. I just sat and watched them. And I thought, goodness, well, these are amazing. Like, why am I not, you know, obviously teenage years, you know, I thought, fantastic. So speaking to my aunt at the dinner table, she said, oh, there's loads of these Bond films. There's loads of them out there. You know, so with my newfound income and independence, I scoured the shops of Brighton, you know, which is a great place. Lots of independent shops, secondhand bookshops, record shops. I believe Boots the Chemist used to sell VHS back in those days. That's how old I am. I think they had a few on deep sale. So I picked up. I mean, I went home with a suitcase full of Bond VHS
covered in soap
and Fleming books. Got home. I think my mum was like, "What is all this stuff? You know, what is all this?" She said, well, maybe you should join the Bond fan club, and the rest, as they say, is history. I've been a Bond maniac ever since.
So good. When you mentioned Woolworths, I thought you were going to mention the two-for-one deal that they were doing at one stage. I think, Matt, didn't we get some in that collection?
Yeah, we did, yeah. So we'd be at church on a Sunday morning, and then there was a Woolworths up the road, and we'd I can't remember how much it was. Obviously, it was better to buy two, so... You know, you'd over the weeks you'd gradually accumulate it. Oh, so exciting! Absolutely loved it.
Shouldn't spend money on a Sunday though. So
well, yeah, don't, yeah, didn't have yeah. Of course, no, yeah, we.
Dear me, piety. But yeah, Dave. Growing up, then, so those four. What were the four then that you had? That you had at your
I can't remember exactly. I remember there was a Connery. I think there was a couple of Moores and maybe a Dalton. I think. They had like You Only Live Twice, The Spy Who Loved Me. You know, they had the films that casual Bond fans would have in their collection. You know, those sorts of movies. Oh, I absolutely loved it. Yeah, it all went from there, really.
And when you saw more of the less casual ones, you know, like The Honor Majesty's, I suppose, and others, which became your favourites over the years?
Well, I became a Bond fan. That would have been the early 90s. So it was in the 6-year hiatus between License to Kill and GoldenEye, which felt like a long time back then, but just seems to be normal these days. I remember GoldenEye was the first film that I saw in the cinema, and that absolutely blew my socks off. I love that film still. Majesty's has always been a film that I enjoy, but yeah, I'm a Tim fan, so Living Daylights, it's always been straight up there. It's always been my top movie, Living Daylights.
There you go. This is. I mean, you must have known coming on here that the obsession with Dalton. It seems to attract us though as well. I think people seem to flock, don't they? And again, before we started the podcast, I genuinely didn't think he was popular at all. I didn't. You don't encounter that. You know, if you're having a chat with your mates in the pub and Bond comes up, it's very rarely that Timothy Dalton's mentioned in the conversation. So it's so refreshing. And obviously we love the other Bonds, but just to have that period, which was probably just before we properly got into Bond, it was like you, it was in that hiatus, that watching all the ones that got recorded off TV. And because, of course, License to Kill was a 15, so we couldn't see that. We weren't old enough for that. And then when GoldenEye came out of the cinema, that was it, wasn't it? That was just incredible. Is Brosnan one of your favourites? Is he on the set in the same conversation with the others, maybe?
No, I think when people ask me my favourite, it is Tim. He is my favourite James Bond. And then there's always that issue with favourite and best, isn't there? I think the issue is when I watch Sean Connery, I always think to myself, oh, I love Tim and I love Rog, and, you know, Pierce is great and he ticks every box. And there are Daniel films that I enjoy as well. Not all of them, but some of them. When you go back and you watch Sean as Bond, you think, wow, you know, when they had those posters, Sean Connery is James Bond. You know, that you can't argue with that, really. So even though Tim is my favorite James Bond, when people say who's the best James Bond, I always think, you know, Sean Connery is an absolute classic. You know, those first four films are untouchable, really.
Brilliant. I think no one would disagree with that. That's superb, Dave.
Hi, this is Robert Dobby, and you're watching Really 007 Podcast. And today is the first day of the rest of your life. So tune in.
Right. Should we get on to the topics at hand? Go through some James Bond songs. So yes, as I said, our eighth volume of the James Bond songs focuses on Goldfinger, and we've mentioned that a bit already. We've then got All Time High from Octopussy, and this we discussed in our very first episode on our review of Octopussy. I think it's just funny just thinking about that song, but we'll get on to what we think about it later. And then we've got, as I said, a song that I'm sure none of us knew existed, probably a song from the Quantum of Solace video game that isn't Another Way to Die. And it's probably less hated than Another Way to Die.
Less known.
No, I'll wait until we get to this. I'll wait until we get there.
Yeah, make a note, Chris.
Yeah, put a pin on that one. Yeah.
Anyway, we will start with Goldfinger. Think back to 1964. John Barry, of course, had just done one full soundtrack with From Russia With Love. And he'd never done a song yet, because From Russia With Love was written by Lionel Bart. So he's running the whole thing now, isn't he? He pretty much, ever since Goldfinger, he's done that, apart from when he couldn't be bothered or he had tax breaks. Broccoli, we love you, John, dear me. Love you more than anybody. Cubby and Harry Saltzman, they allowed him to write the theme song for Goldfinger. Goodness me, good choice. And as well as the soundtrack, of course. When he was writing it, John Barry created the melody before the lyrics, of course. He doesn't do the lyrics. They were done by two gentlemen called Anthony Newley and Leslie Bricus. Presumably, that's how you say Bricus. I don't know who's. Bricus. Who knows? But the two also collaborated famously on the songs for Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, as we all know. Yeah. In terms of the two gents, though, themselves, I think we did mention Leslie Bricus before on our Thunderball songs episode, because he did the lyrics for Mr. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which is another underrated song that never sort of saw the daylight until 1992, really, when it was included on that Bond, that lovely Bond 30th anniversary collection CD that we used to spin, as they never said then. And he also did the lyrics for You Only Live Twice, which, you know, very, very famous song again. And in his non-Bond work, he won two Oscars. He got nominated 8 times. The two Oscars were for talk to the animals from Dr. Doolittle. I think I made this the joke before, not the Eddie Murphy version.
Yeah.
the Robert Downey Jr. version.
No.
Did anyone go to see that?
Well, Rob from this parish, he'd seen it with the kids, I think. And I think he said it was extremely weird, but not as bad as he feared, basically. He was doing some weird acts.
Yeah, Welsh or something.
Even the Rex Harrison version is a little bit...
Yeah, I've not seen it.
Even that's a weird off the wall.
So very odd. He got an Oscar for that song, which is still is relatively famous, isn't it? And he got an Oscar for the score for a film I've never heard of called Victor/Victoria.
Yes,
with Julie Andrews.
Yes.
I just hope, right. So do you know this one, Kristen?
It's Victor Victoria is a classic camp musical farce where Julie Andrews dresses up. She's a woman pretending to be a man, pretending to be a woman.
God.
In a cabaret show, and James Garner falls for her/him.
Right.
Sounds quite like a Shakespeare comedy.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
A little bit, yeah. But it's so... It's one of those films where you watch it and you think, they had a blast making this, and it's filled with love and fun, and it's just a real joy. And for the time that it was made in, touching on a lot of gay sort of subtext, well, not even subtext, there's just, you know, it's out there.
Yeah, yeah.
James Garner's supposed to be this American gangster hiding in Paris, falling for a drag queen, so he thinks he's gay, but actually it turns out he is a she. But then his bodyguard falls in love with Julie Andrews' assistant, so it's terrific. It really
is great.
It's really good. It's really, really good. It'll fill a wet Sunday afternoon.
It had loads of other nominations as well, and I've just never heard of it. There's a lot of these films that go by the wayside now that if they're not on TV, and I mean, I've got like Sky, and I've never seen any of these things mentioned, but I'm sure it can be found somewhere. We've basically unearthed Hawks, so we can do that. I think we can. And try with Victor Victoria. That's great that you've seen it, though, and you can recommend it.
Oh, it's fabulous.
Have you seen
it? I have not, no. I was just thinking, actually, the Talking Pictures channel on Sky / Virgin, they often have a lot of...
Yeah.
They're currently showing one of the kind of Pierce Brosnan TV shows, aren't they? I'm trying to think of the name a bit now. It's the one when he's in Hong Kong and he's...
Remington Steele?
No, not Remington Steele, no. No, it's a James Clavell, I think, isn't it? Novel. Chris might be able to help me with that. Being literary minded, but yeah, no. So it's
I've seen a lot of people talking about it on the
Sphere. Yeah. Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, it's weird. Pierce Brosnan with this sort of grey—I'm nearly grey myself—but this big shock of grey hair in the Far East, being this businessman, and they're all fighting over some lost ark or treasure or something. Mm. It's out there, but it's supposed to be quite good.
Yeah, Noble House.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Mm. Yeah, Mark Kermode is always saying, you know, most of his TV movie of the week on his show is it's always Talking Pictures.
Yeah.
And then the So Bad It's Bad is always on 5-star.
Well,
I tend to watch 5-star more than 2-star.
There's some good classic, like, Rodge movies. And I mean, The Man Who Haunts Himself.
Yes.
And, you know, some of the good that you can find them on Talking Pictures now and again.
Yes. I just need to check the listings. It's brilliant. I have seen some class ones on there, to be fair. It is good. Again, in these sort of overlooked films. Leslie Brooker, she also wrote the song Feeling Good, the standard from Bublé, it seems, even though it was, what's her name, who did it first? I've completely forgotten her name now.
Nina Simone.
Nina Simone, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. So that's basically on most seasons of The X Factor and everything, isn't it? Everyone does that. And Can You Read My Mind? It was a song originally for Superman. The lovely John Williams score, he wrote the lyrics to that.
Really?
But of course, in the end, Margot Kidder, you know, just words it, doesn't she? She just... They did do a song version of it. I don't know whether it was released, maybe. But it's lovely. I mean, it's a lovely melody, all that. Again, people, kids today, will remember that they might know the Superman theme tune, but the love theme is absolutely amazing. You know, that soundtrack is one of my favourites, but that's more John Williams, to be fair, than Leslie Brooker's. But... Anyway, yes, and he did the songs for the Santa Claus, the movie. I don't know why I'm laughing, it's great. But...
Was that a musical? I don't even remember that being a musical.
Well, this is like, yeah. It's one of these things, isn't it? There's a couple of songs, I think, along the way. I think it's the elves, aren't they, that are singing at some point. I don't think, like, John Lithgow is breaking into song too often. Remember? Two others that aren't musicals, but he did the songs for were the first two Home Alones, so Somewhere in My Memory, the lovely song at the end, and in the second one, is it called Christmas Star, Matthew? Can you remember?
Yeah, that sounds right.
So nice. Just, again, John Williams, of course. And then, John's favourite hook.
Mm.
So, which people, again, is it? That's not a musical, is it? Even though it was intended originally as a musical, with Michael Jackson as Captain Hook. Not Peter Pan, weirdly.
Mm, yeah.
No, I think he was meant to be Peter Pan, but I'm not absolutely sure. But there was a couple of lovely songs on that. And yeah, I think he got an Oscar nomination for that. Anyway, to move on. Anthony Newley, the other co-writer of the lyrics, he was married to Joan Collins at one stage. That's just a little fun fact for you. Again, it's one of these people where I need to speak to someone a bit older because he was pretty famous at the time. He was an actor. He was in David Lean's Oliver Twist as the Artful Dodger when he was a kid, when he was a lad. Yeah, that means amazing. And so he was, sorry, this is getting a farce into it. Two of the things he was in as an actor, Terence Young's No Time to Die, which we'll say in our Thunderball review, which heaven forbid it might not be out yet, but I just can't believe no one really mentioned this in the months, years leading up to the film, that, you know, Saltzman, Dick Maybaum and all these people have done one. So was that a tribute or was that?
I'm fairly sure I saw someone on Twitter comment that when the title was released, they found the poster for the original film, or let's say the original film, the previous film.
Yeah.
And even the font was the same.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of stories.
That a remake.
A reason to die, wasn't it originally, the title? One would have thought that they would have got that sorted out before they did the GoldenEye press event, which went really smoothly, didn't it? Really swimmingly. Possibly they should have sorted out the title before then. But I don't think it was a homage, but perhaps it was. Who knows?
I think that film is a proper sort of cheaply made war mercenaries kind of. I'd almost put it in the same bracket as Wild Geese.
And what about the Terence Young one?
Wild Geese.
Yeah, yeah, no, it doesn't really work, but I just had to say it. So,
another thing that he was in as an actor, Anthony Newley, and he was nominated for an Oscar for the score, Dr. Doolittle. Because obviously they were working together by that.
But that was the Eddie Murphy version. No.
It was. Yeah. Great song in that one. Gosh. He was a popular singer as well. This is the other thing. I mean, I didn't know this. He's had two number ones in the UK. No, I don't know anything.
Is this a good time to talk about Anthony Newley's version of Goldfinger then, Tom? Because you mentioned the 30th anniversary limited edition.
This is where I'm leaving, eventually.
Yeah.
I'm eventually leaving.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Because all I was going to say, that song, Be You Mine, was written by Lionel Bart. Just linking it with From Us We Love.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you read a little bit around the subject, Leslie Bricus kind of talks about Anthony Newley's version as being terrific, but a bit creepy. Hence why I think in the end they went for Shirley.
Yeah.
But it's so different, isn't it? It's an odd rendition. Imagine if they'd gone with that one.
Have you guys heard it?
Many times, yeah.
Maybe.
Is it the
maybe
same lyrics or is it completely different?
As you say, David, it was first on that. It was on that, the Best of Bond, James Bond, the 30th anniversary collection, and that was the one with Mr. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang on for the first time. So,
yes, it was, yeah. It's got the Dionne Warwick Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and the Shirley Bassey one as well, I think. Yeah, it's got both.
Is that the two CD one, though? Because it wasn't on Amazon.
Yeah, the double CD one's got lots of extra. And to be honest, this is one of the things I probably picked up when I was a Bond fan. At Fred Guinness. It's brilliant. I love it. It's fantastic.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. When Britta says it's creepy, it's not
creepy.
Wrong.
Yeah. you say he was in Oliver Twist. This rendition sounds like him as Fabian.
Yeah, he does, doesn't he? Yeah.
That's got the power of Casper.
It's like the, have you heard the demo of Golden Bomber? It's the kiss of death from Mr. Goldfinger.
Pretty girl, beware of this. Let me get a more recognizable scoring of it. Improved,
yeah. Yeah. Golden words, he will. So there you go. That's Mr. Newley's demo, as it were. But I think we can all be confident and say they probably did better than Shirley Bassey.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's iconic. Goldfinger, it's Bond iconography, isn't it? It's a Shirley Bassey track. I was watching one of the Blu-rays the other day, and it's about the music of Bond, songs of Bond, and they opened with Goldfinger. It's indelible, isn't it?
Yeah. You've got to remember as well that, of course, like I said, this is John Barry's first song that he's done, and he's the one who chose Shirley Bassey. So again, he's putting his blueprint. Oh, no, Chris, is that not right?
Well, no, you say he chose her. I didn't realise this. At the time, they were...
Oh, right, okay, right.
Yeah, they were together at the time.
They chose each other. Yeah. He did all right with the ladies, didn't he, John Barry? He was a bit of a ladies' moment. But yeah,
definitely. It was just that thing of thinking about it. And certainly when you think about the music and there's that tambourine running through it. If John Barry and Shirley were... flagrante delicto. I can imagine him in the sound booth banging out the tambourine. No, it's...
Well, she did famously remove her bra, didn't she?
Oh, that's amazing. Brilliant. Yeah. What? Again, we should have a woman on here to explain it, what that means and why that makes any difference. But it's one of these funny stories, isn't it? Like the Tom Jones fainting sort of story, isn't it?
Yeah, I think... That's the interesting thing about Goldfinger. There are so many stories, and you almost tell it's iconic because there's so many stories about it. You've probably heard of the Michael Caine story, but I was only reading something recently. I wasn't aware of the Leslie Bricker story when John Barry first played the notes. I don't know if you're aware of that particular story. I'll recount it.
It's the audience.
I'll recount it for you. Leslie Bricker and Anthony Newley went over to John Barry's house to hear Goldfinger. Barry sat down at the piano and he played the first few notes. And I'm trying to think of how Bricker said it now. He said he heard the notes and then he sang wider than a mile because it's Goldfinger. It was Moon River. And that's all he heard. It was Moon River. And apparently, Murray's very wealthy.
Yeah. No, I haven't thought about that, but yeah. Well, what's the Michael Caine one, though?
Well, Michael and Terence Stamp had a flat in London at the time. This is a family show, so apparently there are a number of coming to and from the flat, and I think there were some complaints. So Michael and Terence were asked to leave. Terence Stamp went off and found other accommodation. But they all went to the same club, the Pickwick Club in London. And Michael Caine knew John Barry and said, can I come and sleep at yours for a while? So John Barry said, yes, that's fine. And in the end, I think Michael Caine ended up staying there for quite a while. And as Caine put it, he would basically, you know, be laying in bed listening to John Barry tinker away at the piano. So he was the first to hear Goldfinger because Barry was just tinkering away at the piano and Kane was trying to get him to sleep. Basically, he was out enjoying the nightlife.
Pretty cool.
If you had a lady back as well, it'd be quite nice with John Barry playing in the background.
Romantic music in the background.
I love Goffin because there's so many stories. I mean, Harry famously hated it, didn't he? Harry Salzman.
Yeah, he did.
He really didn't like it. And he said, it's the worst song I've heard in my goddamn life, or something like that. And he actually did apologise. Did he apologise? No, he basically, he was in the same club as Michael Caine and Terence Stamp and John Barry a few months later. And he walked up to the table and basically just went, thank you. And just walked off. And that's just pure Harry, isn't it? Just he couldn't apologise, but... Aww. At least he said thank you.
Yeah. That is good.
But it is that thing of the number of people at the time that were beating down on it. But certainly there's that music documentary. God, it came out around Tomorrow Never Dies time. Music of James Bond.
Yeah.
It was sort of, oh, we'll look back at the history of the music. And they were covering the Shaken and Stirred making of. And there's loads of sort of interesting comments. I think they interviewed John Barry then. And he said, you have to hit the audience straight off with that. Boom, we're in for a good show. And that's what this song does. And it was the same with Guy Hamilton, the director. He said, I don't know if this is going to be a hit or not, but when they open the film and when that song comes in and Shirley blasts it, it is the most dramatic opening. And I love it. It is. It sets the scene. But even within it's not just the song, it's sort of in the film itself, in the pre-title sequence. Obviously, you have the blowing up the secret base. Connery comes in, the fight with the guy, the girl's on the floor, and you get the line, shocking, positively shocking. But then that edit, which is so on the button, almost like in Lawrence of Arabia when he blows out the match and you cut to the sunrise. It's that sort of perfect sound action. When Connery slams that door behind it, you get the bang of the door and then bam, bam. Oh. And it's just, you know, you get all the feels.
Goodness me.
it's that edit, the slam of the door and then off and we're away. It's brilliant.
You need all these people to be together at this point, don't you? It's an amazing that you had all the geniuses. Never mind at the Pickwick Club, but on the Bond film. Yeah. You know, even like Peter Hunt, though, you say, with the edit, of course. Guy Hamilton, John Barry.
Robert Brown John.
Yeah. Could be. Got it all together, didn't he? And then, of course, Sean Connery. Yeah,
because the titles are perfect with the song.
Gosh. According to the session itself. Yeah, oh yeah, of course there's that, isn't there, as well? It's a bit like the one they did for On a Mansion, isn't it? With Flashback. Mm.
Yeah, there's famously bits of the song that kind of correspond with certain parts of the lady's anatomy, isn't there, on the screen. So if you rewatch it, you can't unsee it.
Yeah.
But you say that, even some of the, when they're projecting the clips onto her body, it's so provocative. Like you've got when there's that bit where Goldfinger's jet is pulling into the hangar and sort of the nose, the phallic nose of the jet is coming up inside her leg.
Even the images.
Yeah. And then there's one where she's lying there and her arm stretched out and it's the golf ball is putted along her arm. And then the hole that the ball goes in her breasts. This is every suggestion. I mean, later on you get a shotgun being fired and that's projected on her face. Maybe that's analysing it a bit too far, but it's...
Wow.
You watch this and break it down. All's there. All the suggestions are there.
Chris, I feel an article for License to Play.
But then also there's the shots that aren't in the film.
Yeah.
You get the From Russia With Love helicopter sequence on her. And then there's a clip in Q Branch where a machine gun is in the back of a Royal Mail van. And that's not in the movie. It's, you know, there are bits that were taken out at the last minute, maybe, or I don't know. There are wisps of what could have been in there.
The recording session, this is quite funny. They did it in an all-night session. The session was produced by the in-house producer at EMI, George Martin, who, of course, would go on to score Live and Let Die. Obviously, he's more famous for the stuff he did with the Beatles, but in these parts, we... And of course, Vic Flick was the guitarist. I think he was the one who said she was struggling, getting it all. George Martin was the one who sort of had a word with her, and then she nailed it, apparently, on the next take. So all these people. All
he helped her take her bra off.
Yeah, there's that as well, yeah. We've got
troubling the show now.
Not from you. Yeah,
you.
Yeah. You see, you say that though. The whole texture of the song and the lyrics, it's all innuendo laced, and it's all writhing in the sin of his thirst for gold. And it's, you know, you've just got to drink it in. It's fabulous.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder who this girl is. Who is this girl?
Yeah. Anthony Newley, I think.
Yeah.
This song is just, I mean, it's like it's been said by the other guys, it's so iconic, and it's so, it's a real line in the sand, perhaps, for where the music would go from here. And, you know, being honest, it's probably not one I listen to all the time. It's, like I say, it's so iconic. It's an absolutely brilliant song. It lends itself to being used in the score. But yeah, that the opening and the orchestration of the recording and the way that it's a template almost for what would be to come. And all those best songs have lovely instrumental openings, which I think they still sort of try to do a bit today, not always quite getting it. Not always quite getting to the same level, but it's just amazing. And you know, it's so, your average person probably does know this song, I think. And you know, there are certain things about Bond and certain Bond songs they won't know, which we'll come on to later. But but this one people know, and I think people like, and people see this as a real, you know, that's what a Bond song sounds like. People often mention, you know, the nobody does it better, but Goldfinger in the episode Basic Alan, he walks along the roadside with windscreen washer fluid in bags and singing that,
including his impression of the horn section as well, or trumpet.
Goldfinger is the man with the widest touch, the spider's touch. Such a cold finger, such a cold finger. Pretty girl, beware of his web of sin, but don't go in. And a golden girl knows when he's kissed her. It's the kiss of death from Mr. Goldfinger.
Wasn't there, you say about the Alan Partridge sketch, there was also the guys who did Little Britain.
Oh, yeah.
David Matt Lucas and...
Matt Lucas,
thank you. They did a sort of mini-series of little sketches, and they dressed up as Shirley Bassey and Tom Jones, talking about sort of their musical history. And, I mean, we joke with our little group of friends, whenever we say, oh, she can't sing a song properly, she doesn't have the range, because that's the line that Matt Lucas says dressed up as Shirley Bassey. She doesn't have the range, darling. This goes through all of the titles in the Goldfinger
style.
Very much. Yeah.
And it's brilliant. It's brilliant.
I must say, I'm particularly fond of Garbage's The World Is Not Enough.
Oh, Manson, I love it a bit, but she doesn't have the range.
Sheryl Crow?
She doesn't have the range. Tomorrow never die. Hi, is there? That's how it should be sung.
Is there anyone you like? What about Gladys Knight?
She doesn't have the range.
Sheena Easton?
She doesn't have the range.
Paul McCartney?
She doesn't have the range.
Shirley Bassey?
She doesn't have the range. I'm sorry, Shirley, I love her to bits, but she doesn't have the range.
But that's you.
I don't care. I don't have the range.
That's it, though, isn't it? The songs that get the most parodied are obviously doing it right, like Thunderball.
Yeah.
Because they are probably the two most similar songs, would you say, in the whole Bond canon? Goldfinger and Thunderball, in terms of the orchestration and the...
Yeah.
So much
And the use of Bond theme within the song, which I was going to mention, as well. I absolutely love that so much.
Yeah. I've made a note of that myself. That thing that you've got the Goldfinger sort of tune, And then at the end, as they're repeating, love's only gold. Love's only, and you, the Bond theme kicking in. It pulls us back into the Bond world, and it makes it, it cements it
and
sort of,
and you know, just as we've said, it starts dramatically. The way it ends is pretty dramatic as well, isn't it? It's like a real. It's almost like a bit of a cliffhanger ending for a song.
It builds and builds to this huge climax, and then and then you've almost, it's worth talking about it. The where do you go from there? You've got to have Into Miami, the warm. And it's just, it's got to be.
Skinny John Barry, what is just showing off, isn't it?
Yeah. Into Miami is one of the most warming sort of tune melody.
I found myself singing it just because I live on my own in a flat. I was, I can't remember what I was doing. I was doing some cleaning or something. I just found myself going, you know, just constantly for like 20 minutes.
Even Into Miami has a little bit of that sort of sleazy undercurrent, as Congress did, that sort of the little brassy repeat.
He was all jazz, wasn't he, in the early days, and he's still a lot of that. And Diamonds Are Forever has that sort of sleazy sound as well, in a good way.
Boundary bomb.
Completely, it's great.
It is Vegas. There's a lounge jazz collection that I'm sure, very Chris Goldie. That's his sort of, his niche of Bond music, really. See what he says to that. It was a big hit. It was, comparative at the time, number 21 in the UK, but number 8 in America. Mm. So 20 songs higher up at the time. I don't know what was going on. Maybe Anthony Newley was still at
number Ed Sheeran had probably released about 10 songs.
Before we leave Shirley, if I may, you need to see her Oscars performance.
Of this song.
It was the 2013 Oscars. I think it was the 50th anniversary. Yeah, it would have been the 50th anniversary, I think. They did celebrating 50 years of James Bond. And there was a edit of all of the highlights of the films came on.
Oh, brilliant.
People clapped and it was all very good. And then the film finished. And then from the back of the stage, this little woman in gold walked forward.
Oh,
yeah. And it was Shirley. And we thought, What's she going to sing? And she came on and the Goldfinger music started. And she was a bit shaky at first. You know, she's not completely, God, I'm on stage in front of Hollywood royalty and the world. But then she got into her rhythm. She took control and completely owned it. And it is a fabulous live performance, and she even plays with it a little towards the end. You know, there's a couple of times where she, you know, as we said with the repeat, Love's Only Gold, she gives a little growl.
Oh yeah,
gold, and then absolutely belted the last note, dropped the mic, and was like, yes, that is it. And the whole of the audience got up on their feet and gave a standing ovation.
Brilliant.
It was like, that is deserved. And even they cut to Quentin Tarantino, who was clapping, and the look on his face was like, how can I get her in my next movie? Like, Patty Brown, I want her in one of the film. And it was brilliant. It just brought the house down. If anyone questions, does Shirley still have it? Watch that.
Does she?
Yeah.
Such a performer, though, isn't she? That's always been her strength, the actual performance. I love, when she does it live, it's always, but don't go in. It's slightly different to the recorded version. But it is effortless, and holding the notes is brilliant. When I was looking for covers, I found a... It's so me. Some kind of... It's like the X Factor for kids in Germany.
Oh, no.
But a 14-year-old English boy was doing it. But I think that's too silly. So I'll start with... If Rob Parker was here, he'd want the heavy metal version. This is by the Leningrad Cowboy. A Finnish heavy metal band. But the guitars do kick in. I don't know whether you can hear this. I love the metal ones. I love the metal versions of them.
Oh. It lends itself.
It suits you, doesn't it?
The obvious connection would be it wants to be Live and Let Die. It's...
Yeah, it does sound like that. Yeah.
He's got this big hair. There's a guy on stage with big hair.
Sadly, I don't know what he looks like, but I'm imagining. There's no way Rob Parker isn't putting this on a playlist tomorrow. There's no way.
Really?
From the album Zombies Paradise. Very heavy metal. Oh, bumpy. Right, there we go. We're obsessed with that album, Songs Bond Songs, which it only seems to be us who've heard of it, or me who's heard of it, which was like, was it 2014? I don't know what the significance of that year was, but it was everybody, not the most famous people doing them, almost up-and-coming artists. And this one is by a guy called Jason Burke, who I'm sure you all know very well. When they don't have a Wikipedia page, you do. Oh, right, okay, yeah. Quite hard to research on this chap, but the tracks on this album, they seem to be more sort of like, what's the style of music? It's like that 50s, 60s. You'll hear it now. But more like... it's slightly Barry, but more...
That makes it sound even more like License to Kill, actually.
Yeah, it does.
Good point.
You know, this sort of Mike Flowers Pops style.
It's like sort of, is it Death Love and his orchestra?
Oh, yeah.
But whereas they were all the instrumentals, someone's laid a vocal over the top of them.
Easy listening? I'm trying to think what genre it was.
Yeah.
It's obviously not as epic, is it? It's quite nice.
Well, because a song, any good, a song as good as this lends it, you know, you can.
Yeah.
You can do what you want with it almost, and you'll still get something of a good song.
No, we mustn't take this song lightly, because it is a classic, isn't it? Really the best. We keep listening in for part two of our eighth look at the James Bond songbook, where we discuss All Time High and a beautiful song from the Quantum of Solace video game. Who knew?
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.